It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Welcome to the RTC Weekly Download, where we review old-time radio for modern people to listen to. And that's a great thing, right? We have three programs that we're going to play for you in the next 3 weeks, and they're from our good friends at The Reps, the radio enthusiasts of Puget Sound. Now, they've got a new podcast coming out, so we're kind of sharing our airspace here with them so that you can hear what they're up to. These podcasts feature Jen Olivier, the president of Reps, and a few old-time radio shows. So, without further ado, here is Jen Olivier.
Listen to...
Blondie!
Hey, somebody knock!
Escape.
The Jack Benny Program.
Your money or your life. I'm thinking it over.
Suspense.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men?
I'm Jen Olivier, and you are listening to Reps Presents. In this week's show, we're pulling out the stops with two of the finest programs from the Golden Age of Radio. To the best in comedy, we'll hear the Jack Benny Show from 1948. And then we switch over to Suspense, one of the finest mystery thrillers of its type to hit the air. Just a few years back, Suspense was inducted into the National Radio Hall of Fame. We'll also hear a five-minute mystery, all on this week's edition of Reps Presents. Reps Presents is produced by the radio enthusiasts of Puget Sound and is dedicated to celebrating the entertainment, history, and the voices of radio's past. Over the coming weeks and throughout this radio season, you will hear interviews with some of the legendary personalities of radio, along with some of the best comedy, drama, and variety shows ever produced for the medium. On occasion, we'll even bring you some of the in-house productions produced by Reps, which feature a talented cast of radio thespians. To find out more about Reps, take a moment and visit the website, repsonline.org. Now, are you ready for a five-minute mystery? In this mystery, Sergeant Evans quickly solves the crime from just a few available clues. What clue allowed him to solve the crime? Listen to the story, evaluate the clues, and see if you can figure it out.
Another five-minute mystery.
Should open easily. Two turns right. Stop at 32. Three turns left. Stop at 16.
Get away from that safe, Carter.
I was just checking on some tickets that I left in the safe tonight, Mr. Thompson.
Carter, you've been a cashier with this railroad for 15 years. How could you think of doing such a thing?
Well, what are you talking about?
You've been gambling rather heavily these past few weeks, Carter. You decided to let the railroad recoup your losses. Well, stay where you are. I'm calling the police.
Oh, no, you're not.
Put down that bar, you fool.
All right, I'll put it down.
Oh. How are you feeling now, Carter?
A little better, Sergeant Evans. I can't see very well, of course. I broke my glasses in the struggle with the killer, and I'm not much good without them.
I hate to pour these questions at you when you're not up to par, Carter, but it's important that you help us immediately.
I'll do anything to help the police find the man who killed Mr. Thompson.
Good. Now, you say that you and Thompson came down here to prepare some ticket sales records for the railroad.
Yes.
About what time was that?
I should say about 9 o'clock.
About what time would you say the thief came in?
About an hour later. We heard the door open, and when we turned around from the safe, he was standing near the door, pointing a gun at us.
What happened then?
Well, he demanded we give him the money from the safe.
How did the struggle begin?
Well, Mr. Thompson walked straight at the thief and dared him to shoot. He was warned to stop or he'd be killed, but he continued to go right at him. thief lost his nerve or something, for as Mr. Thompson made a sudden lunge at him, he didn't shoot, but instead hit him sharply over the head with the butt of his pistol. I ran forward immediately and grappled with the thief. And it landed a blow in my jaw, and I fell to the floor. I got up as soon as I could, but I heard him starting his car outside the office.
Did you run outside?
Yes. The car was just pulling away, but I managed to get the first five numbers on the license plate. I wrote them down on this slip of paper.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This will be a big help in the evidence to be presented at court.
Well, I'll be happy to testify.
That's a wise idea, Mr. Carter. A murderer always should at his own trial.
What clue did Sergeant Evans uncover that led him to accuse the railroad cashier of murder? In just a moment, we'll know, but first... story.
Are you accusing me of murdering Mr. Thompson?
Yes, Carter. There was one slip in your story that gave you away. You admitted to me only a few minutes ago that you lost your glasses in the struggle with the thief and that you were helpless without them. Yet you managed to run outside the building and jot down several numbers of a license plate on a moving car in the middle of the night. No, Carter, there was no thief. But there was a murderer. Yourself.
The Lucky Strike program starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, it is usually our custom to take you to Jack Benny's home in Beverly Hills. But at the moment, Jack is taking a bath, so we'll take you to Mary Livingston's house instead.
Oh, Pauline.
Yes, Miss Livingston?
You can have the rest of the evening off. I have a date tonight. We may go to a movie.
Oh, that's nice.
Or we may go to a nightclub.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I'm going with Mr. Benny.
Oh.
I know what you mean, Pauline, but I haven't been out with Mr. Benny since we got back from Europe.
Gee, I'll bet your trip to England would have been a complete fizzle if it hadn't been for...
You still have a crush on Phil, haven't you, Pauline?
Uh-huh. Did you get to act with Mr. Harris at the Palladium?
Yes, we did one sketch together, and at the end of the scene, he kissed me.
Oh, tell me, Miss Livingston, what's it like when Phil Harris kisses you?
It's like being slapped in the face with a bar rag.
I think Mr. Harris is the most... Hello, Hotel, Miss Livingston's residence.
May I speak to Miss Livingston, please? This is Barbara Stanwyck.
Just a minute, please. Miss Livingston, it's Miss Stanwyck.
Oh, thank you, Pauline. Hello, Barbara.
Hello, Mary. I called you because Bob has a conference at the studio tonight, and I'm having a few girls over for bridge. Would you like to join us?
Oh, I'd love to, Barbara. But I promised Jack I'd go out with him tonight.
Oh, then you're going to see my picture. Sorry, wrong number.
Well, how do you know?
Jack just called me for passes.
Passes?
Yes, and tomorrow night, Jack's taking you to see Loves of Carmen.
Well, what makes you so sure?
He asked me for Rita Hayworth's phone number.
Oh. No wonder I've never seen any of Lassie's pictures. She hasn't got a phone. Anyway, Barbara, you shouldn't have given Jack those passes.
Well, I was going to turn him down, but when he came over to pick them up, he said he'd tell a joke on his program, plugging my picture.
Oh, fine. Did he tell you the joke?
Yes. It was a dilly about two termites who get indigestion from eating bad wood. Sorry, wrong lumber.
If he tells that gag in the program, I'll punch him right in the nose.
I already did. You know, Mary, Jack can be so corny. I can't understand why you go out with him all the time.
Oh, he isn't so bad, Barbara. I'll admit Jack may not be the handsomest man in the world, but he's not the homeliest.
Well, no.
He may not be the wittiest, but he's not the dullest.
No, I guess not.
And he may not be the most generous, but...
Shall we dance?
Oh, anyway, Barbara, Jack isn't so bad.
No, I guess you're right, Mary. He did bring Bob a nice present from Paris. A beautiful, bright yellow beret.
A yellow beret?
Yeah, Bob wore it yesterday at the studio.
Oh, I bet it was a riot.
No, but it started one.
What happened?
Phone or no phone, Lassie chased him up a tree.
Well, imagine giving Bob a beret. Say, Barbara, did Jack bring you anything from Europe?
No, but I'm awfully glad he's back.
You are?
Nobody can do rough dry like he does.
Well, you can thank me, too. I help on my days off.
Well, I'm sorry you can't come over tonight, Mary, but I hope you like my picture.
Oh, I'm sure I will. And maybe we can get together next week. Goodbye, Barbara.
Bye.
Well, I'm all ready to go to the movies. Hand me my umbrella, will you, Pauline?
Miss Livingston, it stopped raining.
I know, but you've never sat next to Mr. Benny when he's eating popcorn. Well, he should be here in a few minutes.
Here's your dessert, Mr. Benny.
Ah, strawberry shortcake with whipped cream.
You better eat it fast or you'll be late for the movies.
I know. Rogers, look at me. Do you think I need a shave?
Well... Yes and no.
What do you mean, yes and no?
After the movies, if you take Miss Livingston home by the way of Wiltshire Boulevard, no. Griffith Park, yes.
I'm not going by way of Griffith Park. My car's too old for that. Well, I'm almost through eating.
Say, boss, before you leave, I better put a patch over that slow leak in your rubber cushion.
Why?
Last time you went to the movies, you kept sinking lower and lower, and Miss Livingston thought you were unhappy with the picture.
Oh, yeah. Well, put a piece of adhesive on the leak or some scotch tape. I mean, fix it up any old way.
Any old way?
Rochester. Rochester, that echo again. Didn't you hear it?
No, boss, I didn't hear a thing.
That's funny. I wonder if I'm just imagining it. Oh, well... Here's the plate, Rochester. I finished my dessert.
Just a minute, boss. Let me look at you again. Yeah, I'll go get the razor and shave you.
Shave me?
Yeah, you've got so much whipped cream on your face, it'd be a shame just to wipe it off.
Never mind. I'll use my napkin. Now, lay out a suit for me, will you, Rochester?
Okay. Oh, by the way, Mr. Benny, Dennis Day came over a little while ago, and he said he wanted to see you.
Oh, well, why didn't you tell me? Dennis! Dennis!
Here I am, Mr. Benny.
Oh. Hello, kid.
Hello. Say, Mr. Benny, I don't know why people rave so much about television. What programs?
Fair. I've been sitting here watching it for 3 hours, and all they've shown is that ocean picture. All you can see is the waves splashing up against the screen.
Dennis, you're looking at the Bendix. The television's in the other room. Now, what did you want to see me about?
Well, my mother had to go to a club meeting, and she won't be back till late, so she told me to come over here so I won't get into mischief.
Mischief? Dennis, you're old enough to take care of yourself.
No, I'm not. Last week, when my mother left me alone, it was terrible.
What?
I was sitting there getting bored. I wanted some excitement, so I stuck my head in the Mixmaster.
You stuck your head in the Mixmaster? That's the craziest thing I've ever heard of.
If you've never tried it, don't knock it.
Oh, my goodness. Look, kid, from what you told me, I'm not going to leave you alone in my house either. Now, you better come with Mary and me. We're going to see Sorry, Wrong Number.
With Barbara Stanwyck?
Dennis, I don't blame you, though. She's a wonderful actress. I don't know, she's so realistic. You know, so vibrant. So...
Soleole!
Dennis. Dennis, you heard that echo, didn't you?
No. Do you still keep hearing it, Mr. Benny?
Yes, and I don't know how to get rid of it. I don't know what to do.
Why don't you stick your head in the Mixmaster?
Oh, stop. Come on, we'll pick up Mary and go to the movies. Well, kids, here we are at the theater.
Come on, Dennis.
Uh-oh.
What's the matter, Jack?
There are three of us, and I've only got two passes. Now, let me see.
Shall I kill myself?
No! I'll figure out something.
Jack, you ought to be ashamed of yourself asking Barbara Stanwyck for passes.
Oh, I don't know, Mary. I gave her passes to my picture.
For your picture, they were dropping tickets from airplanes.
I didn't mind the tickets, but I got hit on the head with a dish. Well, I'll go over and buy Dennis's ticket. Wait here for me.
Gee, Dennis, you'll love Sorry, Wrong Number. It's so tense and exciting.
It is?
Yeah. All through the picture, Barbara Stanwyck tries to use the telephone. And by accident, the wires get crossed and she hears two men plotting her own murder.
Gee.
Well, come on, let's go. I got your ticket, Dennis. And Dennis, as we go in, hold my hand and call me Daddy. Come on.
Tickets, please.
Here you are.
Jack, I want to sit in the loges.
Loges? These passes are for general admission. The loges will be an extra 60 cents.
Oh. Well.
Daddy, get your hand out of my pocket.
Oh, I'm sorry. How much did you say that was, mister?
Oh, I gave it to him already.
Oh. Well, let's go in. Imagine a big star like Barbara Stanwyck couldn't get me low seats. Come on, man.
Hot dogs, scorecards, pennants. Get your football pennants here. We have both teams, UCLA and Stanford pennants.
Wait a minute, Bud. This is a theater. What's the idea of selling football pennants?
For the newsreel. Pennants. Get your pennants here. Hot dogs, scorecards, cushions, soft cushions. Oh, you brought your own, huh, Bud?
Yeah.
Come on, Jack.
Immediate seating, third aisle to your right, please.
Come on, kids, this aisle to the right here. Here, I'll open the door, Mary. Gosh, the picture started already.
Yeah, here are three seats over here.
Get in, Dennis.
Operator! Oh, what's the matter with this phone anyway? Operator, please, can't you hear me? I must get my husband's office. Operator, why can't I get the operator?
She can't even get loge seats.
Quiet.
Operator.
Number, please.
Oh, thank goodness. Operator, I've been trying to get at Murray Hill 35097 for the last half hour, and the line is always busy. Will you ring it for me, please?
One moment, please.
It's my husband's office. He should have been home hours ago, and I don't know what's keeping him or why that ridiculous line should be busy.
Ringing Murray Hill 35097. That line is busy.
Busy, busy, busy. That's all I've been getting. It can't be busy. They've got a switchboard there. Why doesn't somebody answer? Why? Why?
Gosh, isn't Barbara wonderful?
Yeah, she's beautiful, too.
You ought to see her husband in a yellow beret.
Damn it.
Operator, operator, try that number again, please. Murray Hill 35097.
Just a moment, please. Ringing Murray Hill 35097.
Oh, thank heaven, it's ringing. It's ringing.
Hello?
Hello, Mr. Stevenson, please.
Hello?
I want to talk to Mr. Henry Stevenson, please.
Hello? Hello, George. Speaking.
Who is this? What number have I got?
It's all set, George, just like we planned it, and we do it tonight.
That's good. I'm ready and the coast is clear.
Oh, those men, what are they talking about? I must have the wrong line. Get off the line, please. Get off the line.
Hold that line.
Damn it. Dennis, put down that pennant. The newsreel isn't on yet.
Jack, be quiet.
Operator. Operator, you cut me in on somebody else's conversation. I want Murray Hill 35097.
Now, look, George, I don't want any slip up on this.
Want me to use a gun?
No, that's too noisy. Strangler.
Operator! Operator!
Number, please.
Operator, listen to me. I just heard two men talking. They're plotting a murder. Operator, what's the matter with you?
Now, remember, George, go in the back way, climb the fire escape, and take your time. Don't make any noise. Go up slowly, slowly, slowly.
Slowly, only.
There it is again. That echo. Dennis, Mary, you heard it, didn't you?
Shh. Jack, it's embarrassing.
Now, remember, George, from here on, it's up to you. See that she's dead by midnight.
Okay, pal. Leave it to me.
Operator! Operator, there isn't much time. Listen to me.
I'm trying to get Murray Hill 35097.
Oh, never mind that. Now get me the police. Look, operator, I'm an invalid, and I've just had a terrible shock tonight on the telephone, and I'm very anxious to trace the call. It's about a murder. A terrible cold-blooded murder of a poor innocent woman tonight. Tonight! You've got to hurry. They're going to do it before 12 o'clock. Get me the police! Get me the police!
That was.
Yeah, I thought it was very good.
Oh, and what a finish when she found out those two men on the telephone were actually plotting her murder.
Yeah, but that's the only part, Mary, that wasn't believable. Imagine the coincidence of just picking up the phone and hearing two men plotting your own murder. I don't know. It was too far-fetched.
It was not.
I agree with Daddy.
Dennis, you can stop calling me that now. Anyway, Mary, I must admit that I enjoyed watching the picture, but in real life, a thing like that couldn't happen.
Oh, it couldn't, eh? Well, look after you last year when you were worried about your option, and you tried to get your sponsor, Mr. Riggio, on the phone.
Look, Mary.
What was it, Mary? What happened?
I'll tell you what happened. It was last May, near the end of the season, and Jack was a nervous wreck.
Busy, busy, busy. It can't be busy all this time. Operator, operator. Quiet, Polly. Operator, operator.
I'm sorry, that line is busy.
Listen, operator, I've been trying to get that number for the last 20 minutes. It's my sponsor's office. They have a switchboard there.
I'm sorry, the line is busy.
It can't be busy. I've been ringing that number since 25 after 11. Do you know what time it is now?
For the correct time, dial Ulrich, 8900.
I know what time it is. Look, operator, I'm Jack Benny. I have a radio program. My option comes up at 12 o'clock today. If I don't hear from my sponsor, Mr. Riggio, in 15 minutes, I'll be out of a job. Now get me Hollywood. 7337.
7337.
Quiet, Polly. Polly, here's a cracker. And eat it slowly. It may be your last. Operate.
I'm ringing the number.
Good. I know it can't be busy. I'm sure there must be something wrong with you. It's ringing. It's ringing.
Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Hello? Hello? Hello? Is that you, Mr. Riggio?
Mr. Riggio? That's my sponsor. Mr. Riggio, this is me, Jack Benny.
Hello, Frank.
They can't hear me. The wires must be crossed.
Well, Frank, I've given the matter a great deal of thought, and I've decided to let him go.
Oh, I see. Well, it's going to be quite a shock to him. He's been with us a long time.
I know, Frank, but he's had it coming. His work has fallen off so badly, it isn't funny anymore.
Yay! They're talking about me. Mr. Riggio, operate!
Well, Mr. Riggio, don't you think you ought to warn him and then give him another chance?
Yeah, yeah.
Might be difficult to replace him.
That's right. Tell him, Frank, tell him. Nice boy, Frank. Nice boy, tell him.
No,
tell
Frank, him. I've made up my mind. I think we should look for a younger man.
Younger? Well, I'm only 39. You didn't think I was old 5 years ago when I was 38. You've got to listen to me.
So you don't think warning him would do any good, eh, Mr. Riggio?
No, he's had his chance.
Mr. Riggio, please. Frank had a swell idea. Warn me. Give me another chance. I might be difficult to replace. Mel Blanc has 5 shows. So he couldn't even try.
Well, all right, Mr. Riggio. It isn't going to be easy, but I'll tell him.
I've been cut off. Operator! Operate! Operate!
Number, please.
Operator, I want Hollywood, 7337. Will you please get it for me?
You may dial that number direct.
But I've been dialing all morning. My finger's so swollen it won't fit in the hole.
One moment, please. I will try that number for you.
Thank you. 25 minutes. 25 minutes to go. If I could only talk to Mr. Riggio. If I could plead with him, beg him, like I did last year. Maybe I could talk him into giving me another...
Sorry, that line is busy.
Busy, busy, busy! What am I going to do? I got to think fast. It's 4 minutes to 12. Wait a minute, I know. I'll call my agent. That's it, my agent. Why am I paying him 9%? I'll try it. That might be Mr. Riggio. Oh, hello?
Hello, is that you, Edna?
Edna?
This is Johnny McGuire. I just got off my ship. Haven't seen a woman in 3 years. You're the first one I called.
You must have the wrong number.
Ah, don't give me that, Edna. I recognized your voice right away.
But I...
Come on, Edna. Let you and me step out tonight. I'll buy you a nice big dinner.
I'm telling you, you have the wrong... Dinner? No. What am I thinking of? No. Then he'd want... I'm sorry, you have the wrong number. I wish I were, Eddie. At least then I'd know... Oh, my goodness. Only 3 minutes to 12. No time to call my agent now. I gotta get Mr. Riggio. Maybe he hasn't signed anybody else yet. I'll tell him I'll do anything he asks me. Anything. I'll let him cut my salary. This year I'll suggest it myself. Why not? The line's clear. It's not busy. I still have time.
This is Hollywood, 7337.
Get me Mr. Riggio, quick. This is Jack Benny.
Mr. Riggio is busy on another line. Will you call back?
No. I'll hold on. I've only got 3 minutes. Hello? Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Is that you, Mr. Riggio? Oh, it's you, Polly. Shut your big mouth.
Hello? What's that?
Mr. Riggio, I wasn't talking to you. It was my parrot. This is Jack Benny. Hello again. Hello again.
Well, Jack, I'm glad you called. I want to talk to
you. Mr. Riggio, please. Before you say anything, listen to me. You got to hear my side of it. I know I've been on the air a long time, but I'm not through yet. Honest, I'm not. There's still a few good years left in me, and I want you to have them.
But, Jack...
L-S-M-F-T. L-S-M-F-T.
But, Jack,
like
Jack...
Like a strike tobacco. So round, so firm, so fully packed. So free and easy on the draw.
Jack!
They're first again with Tobacco Man.
What?
La, 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 la. La, 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 la. Look, I know I've made mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. I mean, everybody but you, Mr. Riggio. Mr. Riggio. And I've done everything you've asked me to. Last year, I kept my eye on the red bullseye till it was bloodshot. Mr. Riggio, you've got to listen to me.
Jack, what are you so upset about? We have no intention of letting you go.
But you don't understand, Mr. What? You mean you're going to pick up my option?
Why, certainly. I've been trying to call you all morning. Your phone's been busy.
My phone busy? Oh.
Tell me, Jack, whatever gave you the idea we wouldn't take up your option?
Well, Mr. Riggio, I called you a few minutes ago, and the wires got crossed. Yeah, I heard you talking to a man named Frank.
Frank? Oh, yes, he's my office manager.
Well, I overheard you telling him to let somebody go, that you didn't want him anymore.
Oh, yes. We had to discharge him. He was a bookkeeper. Very incompetent.
The bookkeeper? Oh. The bookkeeper. Well, Mr. Riggio, if the man wasn't doing his work, what else could you do? I mean, it's not your fault if he isn't capable. There's no place for sentiment in business. That's what I like about you, Mr. Riggio. You don't let your heart rule your head. That bookkeeper got what was coming to him. I don't believe in a man whining and trying to hang on to a job when he's not wanted. I agree with you. If a man fails to deliver, let him go. Get rid of him, I say. Fire him! I want to thank Miss Barbara Stanwyck for being with us on the program tonight and for the passes. And and Rita, I couldn't get you on the phone, so send three, please. Now, to my friends in San Francisco, I'll be seeing you at the Opera House on Friday, October 22nd at the Friars Frolic for the Variety Club benefit.
Oh, you're going to San Francisco, eh, Jack?
Uh-huh.
Oh. You going to go by plane?
By plane? Well, no.
Oh, then you're going on the train.
The train? No, ma'am.
Oh, then you're going to drive your car.
No. No, you see, I made a deal with a fellow who's going that way.
Oh, you're going to share expenses.
No, all I have to do is help him unload the oranges.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
H.G. Wells was one of the most remarkable writers of this century. A storyteller whose tales are more than mere entertainment designed for a moment of escape. They linger on in memory, seducing one into that sometimes dangerous and risky practice of thinking. Such a story you're about to hear. A story with a shattering moral. A story we guarantee you will not soon forget. Listen then, as Mr. Raymond Burr stars in The Country of the Blind by H.G. Wells. And now, The Country of the Blind, starring Mr. Raymond Burr. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Once I had made my way across the Cordillera, I had to find Senor Cartwright if he was still alive. For it was he who had seen me last. That terrible night more than a year ago when I slipped and fell from a ledge 18,000 feet up the face of Mount Parascotopetl. It was a long and painful journey, but at last I arrived at the mine, high in the Andes above Quito, where Senor Cartwright was superintendent. I dragged my aching feet across the porch of his shack and tapped on the door.
Come in.
Senor Cartwright, is it you?
Yes? What do you want?
You do not know me, Senor?
Why, no, you look like a man I knew once, but he
is dead. Dead on the slopes of Parascotopetl?
Nunez the guide? Why, no, it couldn't be.
Nunez the guide, si, senor. That is what I was called.
But you fell. I saw you fall.
Yes.
Why, it's unbelievable.
Perhaps the gods of the mountain had reason to spare me.
Nunez. If we'd had any idea, we would have...
I know. I do not blame you. You could not have reached me. And if you had, I should not have welcomed you. Not at first. But later.
What do you mean?
Senor, you have heard the legend of the Country of the Blind?
Yes. Something about a fertile valley high in the mountains which was cut off centuries ago by a great landslide. Yes, the people who lived there had developed a strange illness which slowly made them blind, and after that their children were born blind?
Yes.
But what has that got to do with...
It is no legend, senor. It is true.
What?
And you have heard the saying, in the country of the blind, a one-eyed man is king?
Yes.
That is not true, senor.
I'm afraid I don't follow you, Nunez. Suppose you begin at the beginning.
Very well. You remember that night on the face of the mountain?
I'll never forget it. Trapped on a ledge scarcely a yard wide, you, Williamson, and I. You had unfastened your safety rope and were trying to set up a shelter when you slipped.
Yes, I slipped and fell down. Down through the icy black night. I fell perhaps 1,000 feet before I felt the heavy, stinging impact of snow. I'd fallen onto an almost perpendicular slope, and then I was sliding, tumbling over and over, and under me, around me, an immense avalanche of snow was rumbling, sliding with me. I fell with the snow for what seemed minutes, every second expecting the terrible final impact. But the impact never came. Slowly, the avalanche subsided, flowing out upon a gentler slope, and finally, mercifully, I lost consciousness. When I awoke, it was morning. My clothes were torn. I was bruised and bleeding. I ached in every muscle, but I had not one single broken bone. I lay there and offered up a prayer of thanksgiving to the gods of the mountain. Far below me lay a lush valley, sparkling in the morning sunlight. I could see the stately trees and the green meadows fresh with dew. And then I saw them. People, men and women working in the fields. Two of them who were quite close failed to notice me as I approached until I shouted. Only then did they look up attentively in my direction. I waved wildly at them, but they took no notice. Why, the fools must be blind. Blind? Could it be that I had fallen into the country of the blind? As that realization came over me, I remembered the words, "In the country of the blind, the one-eyed man is king." I walked toward the men, and I spoke to them. Hello. Oh, hello there.
Who is this man? Or is he a spirit come down from the rocks?
Oh, I'm a man, all right, just like you. But I've had a miraculous escape. And now I find myself here in your valley.
Valley? What is valley? Come hither. Let me feel of you.
Certainly. Here, my arm, my face. You see, I'm indeed a man like yourself. My lips move with speech. You feel... Here, careful there. Careful, gently on the eyes.
Eyes? What are eyes? This is strange. Feel this, Korea.
Yes. He is imperfectly formed. Some strange bulge there. Unseemly.
No. Oh, your eyes are shrunken in, but mine are whole. I can see.
See? See? Pedro, he is a strange wild one. I wonder where he comes from.
Down out of the rock?
No. No, over the mountains, out of the country beyond there, where men can see. From Bogota, where there are 100,000 people, and the city stretches out of sight.
Sight? What strange words he uses, without meaning.
We must lead him to the elders.
No need to lead me, I can see.
See? His senses are still imperfect. Lead him by the hand.
But look, I can... Oh, well, all right. These people had been blind for centuries. They'd forgotten even the words associated with seeing. They did not know what sight was, and they thought me an idiot, only half-formed. Especially when they led me into the pitch blackness of one of their windowless huts and I stumbled over some...
A thousand pardons, Medina Sarote. He is a clumsy one.
I'm sorry I fell down. I could not see in the darkness.
Who is this? And what is he saying?
He is but newly formed. He has come down from the rocks. He stumbles as he walks and mingles words that mean nothing with his speech.
He is a wild man out of the rocks.
No, I come from Bogota over the mountains.
You hear? Bogota. He uses wild words.
That must be his name, Bogota.
He stumbled twice as we came hither.
He must be taught.
No, you don't understand. I can see. But not in the dark. To you, darkness or light, it's all the same. But to me, to us who can see, to us outside in the world beyond the mountain...
Mountain? What are mountain?
Very well, then, beyond the rocks.
There is nothing beyond the rocks. That is the end of the world.
But surely you must realize the sky above covers more than this valley.
Sky? Above? There is nothing above but the roof of rock. He is very raw, my children. He shall have to be taught from the beginning. Take him away. Feed him.
It shall be done.
But guide him. See that he does not stumble over my daughter again.
I shall guide him myself, Father. And feed him.
Very well.
Come, take my hand.
Yeah. Thank you. It will be a pleasure to get outside again, out of this darkness.
Come this way.
What is your name?
Medina Sarote.
Mine is Juan Nunez. And sunlight. This is better. Now I may look at you.
are beautiful. I have not the words to tell you what a wonderful thing you are to see. The village idiot, the slave boy, I with my eyes still whole. I fell in love with Medina Sarote, the daughter of the elder of the village. Only to her could I open my heart. Only to her could I speak of the beauty I could see around me. It is a beautiful valley. Green with grass and yellow with sunlight and flowers, bright flowers dotting the hills.
And I... You said I was beautiful, too?
Yes, Medina Sarote. Yes, you are most beautiful.
It means something nice.
Something very nice. Medina Sarote, why is it you have no husband?
I have a disfigurement. These long hairs.
Your eyelashes. But they are beautiful.
They are considered a disfigurement.
Why? You are the most lovely girl in the valley. But they wouldn't know here, would they? So you have no husband?
No.
What do you think of me? You think of me like all the rest do? You think of me as an idiot?
No. No, you have much to learn, but you will learn it, I'm sure. And you are kind and gentle. And your voice is soft. You speak the words that are soft and warm. No one has ever spoken such words to me.
I shall speak them often. Medina Sarote, I love you.
And I love you.
Then, will you marry me?
I would be very happy to.
No, I will not have it.
But, Father...
He is an idiot. He has delusions. He cannot do anything right.
But he is getting better. He's better than he was. And he is strong and kind, stronger and kinder than anyone in the world. And he loves me. And I love him.
No, I will not have it.
Great sire, if you please.
Yes, what is it, good doctor?
I have examined Bolgata, and the case is clear to me. I think very probably he might be cured.
Hmm? And how might that be done?
His brain is affected by something. I believe I know what it is. Those queer things he calls eyes. Where we have but an agreeable depression, he has great lumps. Consequently, his brain is in a constant state of irritation.
But what can be done to cure him?
It is a very simple surgical operation. Remove the cause of the irritation. We will merely cut out those things he calls eyes.
This, then, was the price of my happiness. To marry Medina Sarote, I must give up my eyes and never see her again.
But they say it will make you well, my beloved.
You don't understand, Medina Sarote. There are so many beautiful things to see in the world. The flowers, the far sky with its drifting clouds, the sunsets, the stars, and you, just to see you, I would never see you again.
You will never regret it, my dearest one. My dearest with a tender voice.
Medina.
Be brave. Carry my voice in your heart. And tomorrow...
Yes?
Tomorrow will be forever.
I only meant to go up on the rocks and look out over the valley. To spend my last day of sight, feasting my eyes on the wonderful, beautiful world of light and color. I drank it in, the green of the fields, the blue of the gently curving stream, the orange of the lichen in the rocky crevasses. I climbed higher to see the great snow-capped peaks towering above and away to the distant sky, and higher as the shadows turned the snow to purple and crimson and deep blue. The valley was far below, and as beautiful as a painting. But like a painting, unreal. Medina Sarote was small and far away, a distant dream. The world of sight was here, all around, overpowering, wonderful. I turned and began to climb up that sheer rock wall. How many months it took me to make my way out over those mountains, over glaciers and snowfields and sheer precipices, I cannot guess. How I lived through the cold and the hunger of it, I cannot tell you. But I'm here at last. Back from the country of the blind.
Good heavens, man. What a terrible experience.
Terrible and wonderful.
But you? You aren't sorry you came back?
Sorry? I see her face clearly now. It is the only thing I do see.
Nunez. You are...
Yes. The gods of the mountain have had their revenge. Those months of crawling over the snow and ice with the sun glaring down. Yes. Yes, I'm blind.
Suspense. In which Mr. Raymond Burr starred in William N. Robeson's production of The Country of the Blind. Written by H.G. Wells and adapted for radio by John Dunkel. Supporting Mr. Burr in The Country of the Blind were Peggy Weber, Ben Wright, Ed Jerome, Edgar Barrier, and Jay Novello. Listen. Listen again next week when we return with another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. This is the CBS Radio Network.
If you like that, we'll have another one next week, so tune in and listen to that as well. Until next week, then, this is Jim Dolan. Thank you for listening.